Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, happy we beat the hell out of UConn yesterday week.
Yeah, I mean, admittedly, we should have won by 30, but winning by 9 is fine, too. Win's a win.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those, the score didn't really indicate how the game went, and also, like, they never really, like, there were a couple times I got nervous when we were within, like, 7, but I think that was the extent. I think that was, like, the closest they got in the second half, so I'll take it, because we've, like, kind of, we lost to them last year, I believe, and we've had some frustrating games with them recently, so it was good to get that monkey off our back, and now if we can follow it up with a nice Georgetown win, which has been even more frustrating because they've been very, very bad. That'd be great. That'd be a really nice way to head into close to ACC play.
Hey, listen, it's undefeated Georgetown with votes in the polls.
Oh, yes. Because of that, you know, incredible schedule they faced of schools that we probably didn't know existed.
Yeah, it's utter nonsense. And at the same time, you know what? Like, Georgetown's doing the smart thing. You're in a very hard rebuild. Save face. Let Patrick Ewing get his feet under him a little bit as a head coach, which he's never been at this point. Like, let your young team maybe figure itself out, gain some confidence. Like, there's a lot of different things that, you know, can be served by this, even if they're going to have, you know, even if they only go, let's say, 18-13 this year and have a garbage RPI and straight the schedule's a joke. Like, at the end of the day, like, you weren't angling to make the tournament this year. And if you went into the campaign knowing that, and then you, you know, put that out of your mind and said, let's just play to win games, develop our program, help our coaching staff out, you know, just kind of figure out what it wants this team to be and how it wants to play. Like, I think all of these things, and, you know, this traces back to, you know, the scheduling philosophy that the entire site has pretty much been behind since day one for football, is that, you know, schedule easier, help your team gain confidence, help your team not get injured because they're facing, you know, more physically imposing teams as much, and then eventually, you know, you're able to compete with those bigger teams. So, you know, as much as we are happy to mock the Hoyas at every turn here, I can't really argue with their hard reset strategy here, at least.
Yeah, I don't have a huge problem with it. I think it's a little different for basketball, where you have so many games and you would like to see, you know, some kind of development. But, you know, it is Ewing's first year as a head coach. It's his first year coaching in college after, you know, a pretty extensive NBA assistant coaching career. So, I mean, they know what they are. It's just hilarious to see them getting votes because they've beaten up on, like, a bunch of 300-plus RPI teams. But at the end of the day, that's not going to really matter because unless they're shockingly good this year, which I don't expect, and I haven't actually watched them play, so I'm just going off of seeing their schedule and the scores and whatnot, they're not going to flirt with the tournament anyway. So hopefully we can go and knock them around and have it be even more definitive than this UConn game was.
Oh, yeah, I would love nothing more than to kind of issue a little payback for the last few games. Definitely have not been my favorite things to watch, and the timing of all those games have obviously been just problematic in general for us of late. So definitely not, you know, definitely would not like to see a third straight loss to a lesser Georgetown squad on this end. I think in general, like, this the polling thing did sort of expose what we already knew about the polls, is that, you know, while there are some folks who carefully consider the teams they're selecting and the results, there's plenty of people who just kind of mail it in based on name recognition. And obviously that was the case in Georgetown's, I guess, case here, where, you know, you see undefeated, you see a name that you recognize, and you go, all right, like, just toss them in. And, you know, as much as, at the end of the day, this really doesn't matter. It's a poll at the beginning of a long college basketball season. They still didn't make the actual poll. They were just, you know, others receiving votes. It's not really that big a deal. I'm not going to get worked up about it. But it was just, to me at least, a conversation point as we were about a week out or so from our game against Georgetown. But first, we have to play other former rival Colgate.
Yeah, I don't expect too much drama with that one. I feel like Colgate's when we have, like, the crazy, crazy long winning streak against, right? Like, 50, 60 years?
Yeah, I think it's been since the 60s, and I think we've played them almost every year. I know with Cornell, we take some time off here and there. But in Colgate's case, I think it is, this is amazing radio. It's been a lot of wins. We don't have like an official number on Orange Hoops, but the last time we lost was 1962. We lost to Howard Hartman's Raiders team, 67-63. It was at home, actually.
I think we've played them every year. I think it's like, you know, it might be every year since then.
I think, well, we played them every year. It looks like every year since 1993. We took 10 years off between 83 and 93.
Really?
Yeah.
There's someone that we've played like virtually every, is it Cornell? Is that the one?
It could be Cornell. I feel like with both of them, though, like we took time off. Yeah, because Cornell we faced every year only since 2013.
And okay, so it can't be them.
Yeah, we skipped them here and there. I really think it's, I honestly think like the Colgate's as close as it gets for us.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was it. I'm sure once we get like towards the games, the Syracuse.com folks will have all of the relevant numbers like that. But again, not too worried about the Raiders. I don't think we've ever even like flirted with losing with them since I can remember. No idea how good they are, because that's also usually not a thing.
Well, I mean,
they're 3-4.
They're 3-4, and I know they tested. We talked about them last week, didn't they? Test Columbia, and then
they beat Columbia.
They beat Columbia, and then obviously
our new
Columbia,
favorite team.
Yeah, and then Columbia tested Georgetown.
They beat Columbia. They lost to UConn. We actually have a lot of like common opponents. They lost to UConn by 12 in the season opener. They beat Cornell by 11, and then they've lost to Columbia by 6. And they've played Albany and Binghamton recently, and they're playing Marist right now.
Huh.
So a lot of New York State teams for them.
I mean, that makes sense. If you're a smaller private school, you want to keep things as close as possible, unless you're getting like a big payout game.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't look like they have another big trip before they enter conference play. They go to Navy, which is interesting. Although
that's
is Navy
conference.
Still in the Patriot League for for basketball? They are, okay. Yeah, so it looks like the trip to UConn was, and then they played at BC and they lost by 4 because BC is apparently still pretty bad.
Yeah, I remember seeing all that hype. Like, it was Norlander, right? That had BC like I think right behind us in terms of like quality in his like top 351 rankings or whatever.
That sounds about right.
I think he had us at like 99 or something stupid, and then like BC was like 100.
Right. BC is 6-3 with losses to Texas Tech, Providence by 20, and I know Providence is pretty good, and then Nebraska by 9. So they might have to wait another year for the endless rebuild to really make its moves here.
Yeah, I'm not banking on that, but for now I'll take the two potentially free wins in ACC play against them and
yeah,
Pitt,
it'd be nice.
And Wake maybe. I'll take a 6-0 stretch from them and then see what we can do against everybody else.
If we take all six of those games, I think we'll be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I would.
I think we can manage to win another 3 from someone.
See, I feel like with that, though, I feel like if we won those 6 games, I feel like we'd need to win another 4.
Well, let's say we clean up. I mean, that might be true because those would be pretty weak overall. If we clean up in non-conference, we'd be 11-1, right? 12-1?
Yeah.
12-1. Yeah, so we'd need like a signature win. Just that wouldn't be. We need to win over one of the ranked teams, which I, you know,
it's
the way you can really tell. That'd be great.
Ball State,
I think
it's
still
do it.
It's pretty, yeah, that's true. But I mean, it's still early to call, because you know we obviously, I think we hung with Kansas a little better than the score showed.
Right.
That being number 2, I think some of these ACC teams might pose more difficult challenges stylistically than Kansas did. I know they bombed threes, but they also had very little depth and didn't do anything really to match our front court, which I think some other teams will have more success against. I could see us beating like Virginia. I'm not super sold on Virginia this year.
Advanced metrics are, though. Like, I was looking up like some win projections.
I mean,
they're
always darlings in the advanced metrics.
Like, I was looking up some win projection stuff, and out of every game, I think them and Duke are the least likely wins. They're like single digit probabilities. while we're actually favored in all but like one game from now until Notre Dame.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think Notre Dame, I think we actually have moved up to like a 45% chance to beat them now, at least according to one site's probabilities.
Yeah, I still think Notre Dame's very good. I
Same.
know the Ball State loss is not great. Those things happen. Well, we'll see. I'm interested to see how we handle Bouncy Golson because we do have some size inside, although we need Sidibe to really bounce back here. He's been dealing with his what do we know officially what his injury is? I think it was a knee, like
It
a
was a knee, but then yesterday it was all ankle.
you could tell he was limping around pretty significantly.
I think it's an overcompensation issue at this point, because if it is the knee and then he went out there anyway on it, and
I don't think we
then
would have played him if it was like something that was we thought was
right.
very serious. But you could tell right before he got pulled finally, like he was really struggling on it. Especially when he got pulled out, like from the center.
Right.
But I mean, if we have both those guys and we have our full rotation, obviously now we are without Geno Thorpe, who kind of looked like he was going to be the odd man out based on the early like numbers.
Now he's definitely the odd man out
So
since, I mean,
now he's the odd man out,
but
given that he's not on the team anymore.
Howard Washington looked good yesterday, and Matt Moyer put in quite a bit of work. I mean, obviously not the same position, but you know, having Moyer be able to come in and actually play significant minutes and make a real major impact on the game, like that's what we needed. That's what I needed to feel a little bit better about this offense, was having another. And you and I talked about this in the season preview episode, like, okay, like we know our one guy's Battle, and Battle's actually put in, I think, better work than we even thought he could. But then beyond him, like, I think Brissett, Howard, and if Moyer can step up, if the three of them can kind of rotate around, it'll make up for teams starting to focus in on Battle and having the, you know, horses to do it, unlike a lot of these non-conference teams. And also make up for the fact that, you know, teams are letting Chukwu do whatever the hell he wants under the basket because they know he can't put the ball in the rim.
Yeah, I mean, if we get, I'm not gonna expect the like possessed Matt Moyer that we got yesterday, and honestly, like being at the game and just randomly sitting very close, like Matt Moyer looked like literally looked like a man possessed, going after loose balls, and obviously he's been a hustle guy the whole time. That's why he's gotten the minutes he has up to this point. But both tip slams like were just pure reading that he got lost. UConn did a very some other year Syracuse-y job of boxing out, and he flew in on both of those. There was one play where he beat two UConn players to a loose ball rebound that he had no business getting. Just like very little things, but he was like, I don't know if Boeheim said something to him before the game or if he just like took it upon himself, but something got lit under him in this game, and hopefully it's not just a flash in the pan, because man, he was just like exactly what you need from that four position, with the guards that we have and with you know, what the rest of this makeup of this team is. I don't expect him to be an 18-8 guy, but if Moyer can be like a solid 20 to 25 minute hustle player, and get you like 8 and 6 on a nightly basis, and have those athletic plays and do good job work on the boards as the whole team has done this year, like he's going to be a very valuable player.
Yeah, I mean, I love what he did, and I think, you know, the fact that it was out of nowhere was interesting. I mean, you mentioned the boxing out. I've rarely seen teams be that bad at boxing out. Like in a, I mean, especially a team like UConn that has the ability to be better in that department. Just a miserable performance by them in terms of like keeping our big men out. And to me, I think that was a little bit of a blueprint too. I mean, UConn's not as talented as the top of the ACC, but that seemed like a bit of a blueprint for Syracuse going forward to really just attack the rim on both ends. And it ended up, you know, creating loose ball opportunities. Obviously, if you got like Moyer or a guy like Dolezal, the two of them being able to kind of scrap, you know, underneath, it changed the tenor of the half-court offense, which is very bad, by the way. And I know it's something you agree with, and something that really kind of came to a head when UConn kept, you know, pushing us a little bit yesterday. Seeing that, it was worrisome, but again, like, the being able to kind of toss it in the middle and see what happens, style of offense does have some redeemable qualities, at least, and it could potentially down the road, especially against teams that we might overmatch physically.
I mean, we're going to need to because we're shooting just over 27% from three. We're not shooting very well from the field. I think it's a hair over 43%. We don't like the half-court offense, the ball movement just gets very, very stale. We saw some flashes yesterday. A part of that was yesterday was Frank Howard was abysmal. But I mean, they're averaging I think 12 assists a game, which is incredibly low
Yeah.
considering they're storing. I mean, I don't know how many field goals a game. 8 games, we have 200 made field goals, 207. So it's not ideal, and it's a lot of ISO ball from Battle. So yeah, we're hitting about 26 field goals a game, and we are assisting on fewer than half of them. Just not good. We're slightly better in transition, but we're not a great transition team either. So it's right now this offense is basically Battle ISOs. Occasionally, Howard can find a lob to someone, or Brissett takes a die off the wing. So we need to start getting some more stuff there. I think, you know, with Dolezal and Moyer, I don't expect us to start running plays for either of them, but if they can kind of keep on chipping in on these second chance points and these just finding gaps in the defense and taking smart shots, if we can keep on, if Chukwu can start converting a little bit more. He's had some flashes where he goes on a run where he'll score like 6 points in a row in a couple of these games recently, but then he'll have like the missed dunk from the Kansas game or some of these missed bunnies where he looked like Paul Harris in the Sixers overtime game. And he's like, he's 7-2. You just go up, man. Come on.
Yeah,
Like,
just dunk it. There's literally nothing like stopping you from doing that, and it's
right.
super.
But then he had that awesome play yesterday where he like basically crossed the guy up off the wing and took a baseline and slammed it. So like, if he can do that, like he's not a stiff. Like Chukwu can play a little bit. He just needs to be more consistent. But I think there's something there. So these have to come along. I think that the offense will improve. The problem is the schedule's going to ramp up, and you need to hope that the offense and these young guys improve offensively and keep pace with what the schedule's going to turn into once we get into conference play.
Right, that's going to be the bigger issue. I mean, like I was saying, teams that have some size that can match up with us, like that's going to be a bit of a problem in there. I think also, like, you know, you had mentioned like what our kind of, you know, two or three plays are on offense. Like if we're going to be that readable in ACC play, things are going to turn south against teams that have better defenses, looking specifically at Virginia, who can definitely defend that sort of thing. Like if all we're going to do is run the same sort of plays and expect Battle to carry the entire load, that's not going to go well against against again the top of the ACC. That we face Kansas and they're a great team, but beyond them, we haven't really seen anyone who is the caliber of, you know, a Notre Dame or a Virginia, Duke, North Carolina, Miami. Like that's a significant portion of our schedule or teams like that. And you know, obviously, you don't want to be incredibly predictable against the squad, against those sort of squads, even if some of them might not be the best defensive teams.
It's going to be a struggle all year, I think. Hopefully we can continue to play good interior defense. I think yesterday we had some trouble on that end with leaving guys open. I mean, UConn hit over 40% of their threes,
Oh, good Lord.
and it was really the only reason why they were even in it. Was because
Wide
they knocked,
open.
yeah, wide open shots.
And they're not a good 3-point shooting team.
No, that's the thing. I was talking to UConn fans before the game, and they were like, "Oh, we're not going to be able to shoot at all." I'm like, "Yeah, this game will be played in the 60s probably," which wasn't totally wrong because we can't shoot either. But our interior defense is very good. We collapse on guys pretty well. I can't remember the last second chance points we gave up. The problem is, I think our young wings have trouble rotating over, and Howard still gets lost sometimes. Battle's pretty good, and Battle had like 5 steals yesterday. But I mean, you know, with a team this young, you would expect the defense to actually probably be behind where it is. So hopefully this is like a whole thing where we're going to grow as a group. Otherwise, it'll be a real struggle. But I mean, it's hard to really complain what we've seen so far.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I'd say that, and we touched on this last week too. I think I'm more impressed by a lot of things than I thought I'd be at this juncture. But a couple changes here and there. I know we talked about it on Slack a little bit today too. Like, you know, defense inside the arc, great. Defense outside the arc, not so much. You saw a lot of like guys kind of, you know, sprinting across the court to cover a guy who was, you know, shooting a wide open three. That's not going to happen when the zone is really moving from, you know, end to end really, really well. But at the same time, the reason that those shots were open was because SU did such a great job locking down the middle. And, you know, I don't have the full numbers in front of me, but UConn really wasn't able to get much done on the inside, which is great. Two random notes before we continue on this, and we're almost at halftime here. We had our second straight day of a top 10 upset. I don't know if you were scoreboard watching, but Loyola Chicago beat Florida, who is now, I think, definitively bad. Nevada.
It's
been established now.
Florida, Ashley Babb.
Also, Washington is up 2 on Kansas.
It was up 2?
Washington.
Go hop.
Go hop, but also don't mess up our strength of schedule.
Ooh, yeah. I don't know why I can't root against Hop.
No, I'm not going to root against Hop. I just don't really care if he wins this game.
That's fair. It's also very early. It's just before the half. Yeah, how does Loyola Chicago, which I can't ever remember being good at all.
At anything.
That
even differentiate themselves from the other Loyolas.
Yeah, like, they're like probably the least Loyola that I mean, they're like the last Loyola I would think of. We talked about Loyola last week. It was not Chicago. I have now learned they are the Ramblers.
Ooh, that's fun.
That's something.
That's a name.
They're 8-1. They got blown out by Boise State in their last game.
Loyola, you're on the short list now.
You are, yeah. You are on the low major short list here. They beat UMKC. They beat Wright State. They beat Kent State, which is a nice, you know, that's a MAC team, which I guess is still technically a mid-major. They beat UNC Wilmington.
Yeah. Those are things.
All right. This is a little team.
And Florida's garbage. They're 5-3 now.
Yeah, I mean,
Florida's
so
done.
Florida lost to
everyone.
They lost to Duke in the PK80, right?
I think so.
Oh, they lost 3 straight.
Oof.
Yeah, they lost to Duke in that really awesome PK80 game, and then they got blown out by Florida State the other day, and now Loyola, Illinois. Or is it Loyola, Chicago? Or like the abbreviation is L-IL, but then it's apparently Loyola, Chicago, so ESPN's got to figure this out.
That's silly. Also, while we mentioned Florida State, they're near, I mean, just by way of games played, they're not at the top of the standings, but I mean, we have a lot of pretty good teams in the ACC once again, and that kind of has me, you know, I talk about how deep this conference is all the time, and everybody else does too, but, you know, I mean, when you see Louisville at 5-2, knowing that they're better than that, when you see NC State at 7-2, you know, Notre Dame at 7-2, and you know they're better than that, Clemson maybe, I mean, they're not better than 7-1, but the fact that they're able to get there is a good thing. I mean, Florida State getting to 8-0 is something unexpected when they were kind of picked below us in many cases. Definitely, this conference might be deeper than last year, even if it's not in the ways we thought it would be. Wake and Georgia Tech look really bad. Those were surprising things so far. Louisville, I think, is struggling the way we thought they would. A lot of other people were just kind of denying the fact that they could struggle, but that happens if you trade in a Hall of Fame coach for a first-time coach. There's certain adjustments that can't get made. There's certain preparation. I mean, yeah, he's not really changing the team much from Patino, but Padgett's obviously going to have a little bit of a learning curve, and, I mean, with luck for him, maybe figures out that learning curve here versus an ACC play where, you know, you can pay pretty dearly for it pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's going to be a grind, as it always is. Even like in years past, when you're playing like a 12th ranked ACC team, like, it's not always. I mean, we've seen with Boston College, even which I do think is more on us than the ACC as a whole. There aren't like a ton of just straight passes, and hopefully Syracuse is a tough out as well, because I think this will be a kind of a different style than what teams come to expect from us. And also, I just looked this up. Loyola Chicago apparently won the 1963 national championship.
Interesting. Were they the Ramblers back then?
I don't know. I honestly have no idea if they were the Ramblers back then.
I mean,
they won it because they were integrated and other schools were not.
Way to go, guys.
So respect for Loyola Chicago, a dormant college basketball powerhouse.
Maybe
who last made the tournament in 85.
They Horizon?
Yes, they are Horizon.
Way to go, gang. All right. Why don't we do a little halftime, then we can jump back into some more basketball stuff, figure out what else we want to talk about, because Colgate preview is only going to get us so far. But Dan, what have you been drinking?
Nothing really. I've kind of been under the weather the last couple days. I do have a fridge full of new craft stuff, though, so I think next week I will be able to report back more. But this week was pretty dormant, just as I wasn't feeling great for most of the last couple days.
Very nice. Yeah, I didn't drink a ton last weekend. I do have a variety pack of Sierra Nevada's like winter stuff. I was heading up to hopefully heading up to the mountains this weekend. We'll see what happens with the fire situation and everything up north, but If I do go up there, I will be having a sampler pack from the Sierra Nevada family of beers. Some things that I drank of late had one way or another. It's a sour from Brewery Tarot and Cascade. Really nice collab. Surprised it didn't cost $75 for the bottle based on the pricing that those two brands will usually go with. But really, really good beer. Enjoyed that one a lot. Had a hop tonic from Smog City. 24th Street Pale Ale from Strand over here. Had a Wild Ale from Monkish, a Discordant Melody. And also had from Monkish Xylophone Tones, just a double IPA. And their typical New England style kind of hazy IPAs. And also had the Feminist from Monkish. It's a Belgian triple. So Monkish actually started as a Belgian ale style spot and then kind of pivoted to IPAs as and sours. They still do the Belgian styles, but IPAs and sours have kind of become their jam now. And yeah, I'll always stop in for one of those from them.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense that they were a Belgian shop first, considering the name.
Yeah, that was definitely their... They actually used to have a sign up at the top that said, like, no IPAs. And then they then they conspicuously took that down, and now they make
then
a lot of...
Then they realized they were in California, and that wasn't going to fly.
Nope, and now they make a lot of money off IPAs. So way to go, guys. But, yeah, I guess we'll jump into Colgate stuff, and we'll see where we go from there. Colgate has lost 3 straight. They're 3-5 overall. Their last win was against Columbia. Again, you mentioned that they only lost to BC by 4. They've beaten UMBC. They beat Cornell by 11. They are, like most teams in the Patriot, currently have a losing record. Only team with a winning record in the Patriot, well, teams with a winning record in the Patriot right now are Navy and Army. So, yeah, I think Colgate is exactly what we usually expect from them, which is good enough not to completely tank the RPI, but not really good enough to matter.
All right, so I'm looking through the roster. Some interesting notes. Their second leading scorer, Jordan Burns, is a freshman from San Antonio.
Huh.
I don't know how that happens. He's averaging 13.6 points a game. Their leading scorer, Will Raymond, is from the New York City, which makes more sense.
Can I just call him Rayman? Like, just for the hell of it?
You can, if you want.
Call him
stopping you.
Rayman, and then Jordan Swapshire just has a fantastic name.
Swapshire, okay, this was... Is he related to the Louisville Swapshire?
This is... this is going to be quite the search. We got Jared Swapshire.
I mean, how many Swapshires does there be?
It seems like quite a few now.
Apparently. Yeah, that was my next question. And but he's been at Colgate for 3 years. He's okay. I mean, they have, you know, a couple double-digit guys, 4, I think, averaging at least 10 points a game. It doesn't look like a lot of size. I mean, out of those guys, I think just Swapshire is like 6'7". I'm going to assume, and they only average 33 rebounds a game, so I'm going to assume this is going to be rough for them on that end.
Yeah, this is not going to go well for them. It seems like the Swapshires are not related. Will Rayman, as we're going to refer to him, is only 6'8", 205. So he's coming in around, like, you know, dull as eye size when he's not really going to be able to hack against guys like Chukwu, who should be able, I mean, as long as he can keep the foul numbers down, should be able to out-rebound them on his own, perhaps. But
yeah, Dana Batt is their biggest guy who's in the rotation. He averages 24 minutes a game, and he is 6'9". Rayman, our favorite Mega Man villain, is their leading rebounder. The one thing, like, and these numbers, like, looking at them now versus, like, and then you realize that college teams just shoot and hit a lot more threes than they used to, but they do shoot just under 40% from three. So, we could have some interesting moments with open shots, but overall, they're not shooting very well from the field, so I expect them to kind of jack them up. It looks like almost half of their, actually more than half of their overall field goal attempts are from three-point range, so we're going to see them down up a bit, if I had to guess.
I mean, that's fine, as long as they don't hit a ton of them.
And I mean, yeah.
It seems like only one player is really going to do that. Well, now I get two. Rayman, who my Rayman reference was was one to the Ubisoft video game of the.
Oh, is that the guy? Is that the one with like no torso? Is that?
Yeah, he's just got like no arms and legs, but he's got like feet and hands.
Yeah, he has a torso. He has no connective like
Yeah.
limbs. He just has right. He has his extremities, but not arms.
Just weird.
I don't know how that would work for basketball.
I mean,
I guess you couldn't really get fouled.
you couldn't get fouled, and who knows like how far you could extend yourself, because if you don't have any limbs to stop you, now your hand can go 10 feet in the air and you can block everybody.
That's true. I haven't played a Rayman game. Could he just like dunk from standing? Like, could he just send his hands with the ball?
We're gonna have to investigate this. Let's and as somebody who's in the know on video games.
We'll have to get our Rayman experts on the case.
Yeah, I
Would Rayman be good at basketball? Should we
Yeah,
tweet it now and see? I'm gonna
let's
tweet it out now.
do
Just retweet me, and we'll see if
it.
we get an answer by the end of us recording tonight.
I have some faith here. Yeah, I stopped playing video games after NCAA football stopped being made. And the only thing I do play now is some old school Pokemon on the old Game Boy Color. Just to pass the time. So I'm not the person to ask, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know there were Rayman games recently, but I also have like mostly stopped playing video games aside from like the occasional like random game of FIFA. If NCAA football ever comes back, I will force myself back into it, just because NCAA football's the best.
Oh, same. The second it comes back, I'm gonna go buy a system like that day. There is no doubt in my mind. But yeah, as I mentioned, we have two players that could hit threes. One of them is Rayman. The other one is Jack Ferguson, who doesn't play a ton, but he is like kind of a little bit of a 3-point specialist. He's 8 of 18 on threes this year. That doesn't sound that impressive, but it's something. He's a freshman from Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's 6'3" and 170 pounds, so he's a lanky guy. And yeah, if you're looking for a random person to light us up from three in this one before we settle things down, he's probably it.
Let's see what his career high is and see what we're looking at here.
I mean, he's a freshman, so it's not really going to be that high.
It's 12 minutes BC. He played in 11 minutes. How did that happen?
Looks like.
Dude lit up BC in those 11 minutes.
He's the
He is
perfect
6'3".
person for this. He's already we already know who it is. It's him.
No, it's definitely him. I'm looking at his game log. He was 3 for 5 against Cornell from three. He was 0 for 4 in his first game at UConn in 17 minutes. That was the most he's played. He played 14 minutes against Cornell, also his career high of 12, 3 for 5 from three. He played just 3 minutes against UMBC, and then the BC game, he came in and scored 12 minutes and 11 or 12 points in 11 minutes on 4 of 7 threes. All of his shots were from three. And then he's hit just 2 of 4 since then. He had a DNP against Albany. So yeah, this guy is very feast or famine. So yeah, he's gonna score 18 points. He's going to hit 5 of 8, and then another basket and a free throw, and he's going to score 18 points in 16 minutes of play against us.
Oh, 100%. I already have the article written in my head when I do my weekly kind of things you need to know about this team, and that usually includes who's going to kill us. And since I've been doing those, I usually do add in the guy's going to light us up from three, along with the guy who's just going to score a lot of points. And yeah, I think Jack Ferguson definitely fits the bill. I looked up his profile on Colgate's website, and Jack Ferguson looks exactly the way I imagined.
He looks like a Jack
He
Ferguson.
does look like Jack Ferguson. He also played golf in high school and ran track.
This is the most Jack Ferguson that's ever existed. And he goes to Colgate. I mean,
Yeah, that's
I'm
true.
looking him up now.
The too Colgate, too furious. Just
God, he's such a Jack Ferguson. It's unbelievable.
if I
He
have
looks like a Disney Channel original movie by character.
oh Jesus. And now we're officially dragging an
And he's from
18-year-old.
Indiana?
Oh yeah, most
Oh, this is
Indiana.
stupid.
Oh, Jack. This will be the price we pay for this. What will be your 18-point breakout against Syracuse on ACC Network Extra?
We were expecting him to have his best game by far of his college career, of his young college career.
Yeah.
Yes, we see big, unless he's injured. Like, we don't know.
I fully expect to see a lot of him. That's fine. As long as we win by at least 20, I think I'll be happy with the win in this one.
Given the team's kind of struggles from the rest of the field, I don't expect them to have a lot of luck scoring inside against their defense. So I think they will knock down some threes. But I think this will be a pretty tough outing for them. Otherwise, I don't think they will rebound against us at all. I expect like a solid like 25-point win.
Yeah, that's fine. Although, side noting again to Kansas-Washington. People are saying that the big reason why Kansas is losing to Washington, or at least sticking around with Washington, Kansas is down 6 right now. And they're saying that Kansas has no size and that Washington is exploiting that fact. It's funny because they feel like nobody ever mentioned that when we were doing that the other night. But then again, we weren't up 6 in the second half against them either.
No, and also like, how much size does Washington have? I don't really know much about this Washington team. I wanted to pay more attention to them, and then like life caught up, and regular season Pac-12 basketball is hard to come by. To be honest, it's not the easiest thing to watch.
Thanks, Pac-12 Network.
Like, visibly, you can't actually find it.
Yeah, not the best move on that conference's part, but we've been over this already. About just how kind of like not good the Pac-12 is at like getting their product out there. Well, we're on this subject. I don't know if you saw that quote from David Shaw the other day, who was like, you know, once again complaining about the fact that like SEC and ACC only play 8 teams in conference play and all that. And he was saying, you know, like USC, like they play 12 straight games, and like, well, like who told them to play 12 straight games? Like who told the Pac-12 to put their best team through the ringer and like force them into a situation where of course they're going to lose 2 games. You know, who told Stanford to schedule, you know, 2 to 3 power conference teams every year in non-conference play? Nobody. Just a very, like the Pac-12 is a great league and it's a hell of a lot of fun. And Pac-12 After Dark has become this, like, kind of cult thing that's, you know, really a blast. But at the same time, like, there's just this, like, you guys are becoming a non-factor in the playoff race because of how you're scheduling and, like, I don't like the SEC's mailing it in and then just getting invites for the hell of it. But at the same time, like it obviously has its advantages. Clemson's actually thrived despite not mailing it in. They've been playing 2 power conference teams outside of conference play for the last few years, at least, usually a mix of like Georgia and Auburn, plus their South Carolina date every year. I just think, you know, if you're the Pac-12, like stop making excuses. Like you have a really tight league right now of teams where even the bottom of it, I mean, other than like Oregon State this year, who just like the bottom fell out and that's why they replaced their coach, like, and then they made, I think, an uninspired hire after going after a at first inspired hire in Bo Baldwin. Like, I don't really see how the Pac-12 missing the playoff is anybody else's fault but theirs for not instructing their teams to maybe look out for everybody's best interest a little bit more.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And obviously Stanford, I don't think they were a playoff-caliber team anyway this year. Their quarterback issues are they were pretty one-dimensional offense. I know things got better when they put in the freshman whose name is escaping me.
I don't remember. The Italian.
That's what you're for. Yeah. I'll look it up for poignancy. But
Costello. Yeah, the Italian kid.
Costello. KJ Costello. He was a All-American. Good quarterback. He'll get better. But, you know, Georgia can do that because they have a ridiculous defense and 2 amazing running backs. Stanford has 1 and a lesser defense, and Jake Fromm is probably a little farther ahead. But overall, I mean, Stanford's in kind of a tough shot spot because they have that Notre Dame date every year. Playing Rice is great, but, like, San Diego State is never an easy game. And if they hadn't had that game on the schedule, then you know, I don't think they would have been in the playoff, but they would have had, 2 losses heading into the USC, into the Pac-12 championship?
Yeah, with a big win over Notre Dame. I mean, granted, the San Diego State game, it depends on how much you want to chalk that one up to the blackout that happened mid-game. Or
I
I guess
kind of forgot about that. That was so long ago.
third quarter-ish?
Yeah, I do remember that now. But either way, I mean, Stanford specifically schedules themselves in a hole. But part of me commends like these conferences for playing the nine conference games. I think the ACC would be more interesting in a lot of ways if they did that. But it's definitely like not a great recipe for success if you're trying to just get yourself some wins. And obviously, you brought up Clemson. Clemson's for one of the two or three best college football programs right now, so they can afford to play up to teams,
Yeah.
and they obviously have a great home field that they can rely on, and they can slip up in Syracuse one week and be okay. But yeah, for these Pac-12 teams, they really aren't putting themselves in the best position to make the playoffs. Same with the Big 12, which obviously Oklahoma's great, so they made it. But if they had lost the Big 12 championship, I don't know that TCU would have made it in.
Definitely not.
The ACC and SEC, like, they just seem to know what they're doing with, and there's no, I don't know that it's a coincidence that the only two leagues now that have not missed the playoffs are the ones with eight conference teams.
Yeah, and I mean, in some ways, nine would be better, but I think because of just what the teams do from a non-conference standpoint, including facing one another here and there, it doesn't really allow for it. I think that I understand why the other leagues do it. Well, maybe not the, well, the Big 12 does it for different reasons than the Pac-12 and Big 10 do it. The Big 10 and Pac-12 do it for TV inventory. The Big 12 does it because it doesn't make sense to play all but one team in your non-conference play. And it's obvious why the ACC and SEC avoid it, and one of the after effects of that is that they're always in the playoff. I think that if you're the Pac-12, you're getting hurt by it because of how deep your league is. The Big Ten isn't as deep, so you can still, I mean, at the end of the day, they had the fifth and sixth best teams in the country according to the playoff committee. That's nothing to necessarily scoff at, but the Big Ten can still get away with it. Because of the fact that for every time you have to play Wisconsin in a crossover or Michigan or Michigan State, you also get to play Purdue, Rutgers, Illinois, Maryland, Indiana. Like there's a steady, basement of the Big Ten that's not necessarily going to go away anytime soon. Maybe it does one day, but I'm not banking on it. Despite the amount of money pouring into that league, I think the Pac-12 is unfortunately just in a different scenario, and maybe. I mean, they're not going to expand without, tearing the Big 12 apart. But if they did, and had a legitimate, bottom of the league, maybe that would work. But, it's been a weird confluence of events for them because you have, USC with sanctions, then USC coming off sanctions, Stanford, who's pesky, Washington, who's resurgent, Oregon, who's kind of caught in the middle of rebuilding and reloading or something right now. You had Colorado slightly resurgent last year, not so much this year. Utah's always pesky. UCLA doesn't know what the hell it's doing. Like, there are a lot of characters in the Pac-12, and that kind of just makes for a tough week-to-week thing. Like, the Big Ten, at the end of the day, has this consistency week-to-week, and, Ohio State is the exception, not the rule when it comes to speed at virtually every position, the physicality that they can bring, in the trenches. But for the most part, like every other Big Ten team, save Purdue, is just going to be kind of running at you. They're going to try to out-physical you in the trenches. Even your Rutgers and Maryland's, have tried to adopt parts of that, also because of who they brought in as coaches from the Big Ten trees. So the Pac-12, there's so many different varieties of offenses and skill players to prepare for every week. So this is just kind of a long way of saying the Pac-12 would do well to go back. Down to eight games. It would also help us out because then we'd have another group of teams that we could schedule with, and we need help there. But Pac-12, you are cutting off your nose to spite your face here, and I don't really know why, and I wish you wouldn't because I thoroughly enjoy watching Pac-12 football, both in person out here as well as on TV late at night.
Yeah, it's a tough thing to do because you can't really go intentionally go get worse teams. Like, I guess you could add Kansas if you wanted or something and say it's a basketball move or whatever. But I mean, generally you're not trying to add teams to diminish the football league as a whole. But I do think there is something to not having that total bottom tier because you've had Colorado's gotten better where they're not a walkover. Cal was competitive this year. Obviously, Oregon State, like you said, was pretty bad. But like even Arizona State looked like they were going to fall apart, and they still ended up going 6-3 in conference somehow and beating Washington. Really, like there was no, the only, there was only one bad Pac-12 team this year, and then there was like the Utah, Colorado, UCLA, Cal group. But all those teams, Oregon, even when they, you know, they were pretty good when they had Herbert. All those teams were like pretty competitive on a week-to-week basis. So that really hurts. Like you said, it hurts your ability to, you know, pencil in wins like you can even in the Big Ten, where obviously you have three or four really good teams at the top of one of the divisions, but the bottom of that division's weak, and then the rest of the, I mean, the other division is like if you had the bottom of the Pac-12, but like the entire division and then Wisconsin, or I mean, I guess Iowa's probably a little better than that, but it's definitely an interesting issue because, you know, I think you'd probably say you'd rather have this than when Colorado was hopeless and Washington State pre-Leach and you know, Cal when they were bad. But instead, like you have this parity that doesn't exactly lend itself to one of your teams rising up. I mean, USC in a different year could have easily been a playoff team, but instead, you know, their schedule kind of ate them.
100%. I think, you know, I don't think you're going to see them scale back to 8 games, but I mean, who knows? If the Pac-12 starts missing on a more regular basis, and I mean, they've already, have they missed more than anybody else?
They've missed twice now. So yeah, this is the first year the Big Ten hasn't made it. The Big 12 hasn't made it once the first year.
Right.
Wait, or did they? Did the Big 12 miss last year? Or
no, Oklahoma. Yeah. Oklahoma was 2 years ago.
Who was in the playoff last year? It was Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and who did Alabama play in the semifinal?
It was Washington.
Okay, so the Big 12 missed twice, and the Pac-12 has missed twice. And the Big Ten has missed for the first time. ACC and SEC are 2-for-2, or 4-for-4. SEC is actually now 5 teams in 4 years, which is right. Impressive.
Well, also,
and I don't really have a problem with it. I thought I was I don't know where you landed. I was leaning Alabama in that debate. I wouldn't have had a huge problem with Ohio State, but I thought that was probably the right call. I think Alabama was probably the better team.
I had Alabama. I mean, Alabama was the best team in the country until the last week of the season. And then suddenly, like, you know, you lose one game and you happen to lose it in the last week. And yes, it did cost you the division, but you still have one loss. You still are the most talented team in the country. Other than one game, you proved week in and week out, even if it was against, I'd say, like, I don't think Alabama, a lot of people focusing in on Alabama's schedule thinking Alabama got the benefit of the doubt. They didn't. I think it was more that Alabama just showed that it was so much better than its opponents for the first 11 weeks that, like, you can forgive the one loss. Personally, I would put UCF in as that fourth seed, but I know that that's a very college football internet thing to say, but that's honestly, I think that would have been the best compromise. Don't even bother, you know, having that debate between Alabama and Ohio State, but I know that would never happen. So I think Alabama was the least of the evils possible in that fourth slot.
Yeah, I mean, the UCF thing was just not going to happen. I mean, the group of five is just not have a road in until they expand to even six. They probably have to expand to 8, to be honest, unless the six include an auto bid, which I don't think it would.
Nor should it, really, based on, because for as much as, for example, we were talking about this in the comments and on Twitter a little bit, like, if you look at how the teams have finished, I mean, I don't agree with how the playoff is ranked. I think the committee has done a disservice to the G5 in a lot of ways, in terms of how they've ranked them between, you know, what they did to Marshall, Houston, this year with UCF. Like, UCF was still 12th in the playoff rankings. So even in a 6-team or an 8-team, they wouldn't have made it. But if you look at if you look at most years, like most years, you're not going to have an unbeaten G5 team, and you're not going to have, you know, this kind of overwhelming, like, grounds. But like last year, like, Western Michigan was unbeaten, but then, like, nobody could make a case for them being like one of the four best teams. Like, UCF actually had the numbers to back it up this year, and I just think, like, most years though, you're not gonna have that, and that's fine. I just think that though, when you do that, there's no reason, and this goes back to the old BCS issue of, like, okay, they had to finish in the top 8 or so to get an invite or whatever it was. Like, if you have a team that's worthy, then you need to recognize them. And if you don't, then you don't.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way to go about it. I think if they got to eight, I think you would probably want one of those eight to be a group of five automatic bid. Six is probably pushing it. Although, like, if it was six this year, I would have probably been pushing for UCF to get number six just because it would have been them versus, I mean, who ended up sixth? Wisconsin? Yeah, I would have rather seen UCF than Wisconsin, to be honest. I don't think we needed to see Wisconsin play Georgia. Oh God.
Oof.
That would have been like the ugliest 21 to 3 win, like absolute beatdown of a 17-point win or 18-point win.
Yeah, I think with eight, the only thing that's tough with eight though is that you could accidentally punish the one seed.
If they get like a sneaky, like, because who's the eight seed now? Auburn? Or no,
Yeah.
Auburn's seven, I think.
No, that doesn't mean like. Well, I'm saying if you made the G5 team, you're an automatic in an eight team. You'd almost always get them as the eight seed. So now, if you're the one, now you have to play like a feisty Boise, UCF, Houston. Like I wouldn't necessarily consider that a reward.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, you could definitely. I mean, it'd be like the you could run into some Boise State, Oklahoma stuff, which you know, in my opinion, wouldn't be the worst thing. But
No.
I think if you have Nick Saban in at the one seed most years, you'd probably be okay.
This is fair. All right, before we go, did want to continue our conversation last week around low major teams that we would like to kind of follow a little bit. And I was looking up and down the standings here, and a couple teams come to mind. Feel free to just yes or no any of these. Albany seems pretty fun so far this year. In state, obviously, there's we don't face them, so there's no like conflict of interest there. Let's see. Who else? Portland State. I always thought their brand was fun. That's a team that we could potentially look at. Is Portland State low enough? Yeah, I guess Big Sky is low enough.
I think Big Sky counts, yeah.
Yeah. Hell no to Liberty. Let's see.
Nope, not even close.
Nope. UCSB and UC Davis are both funnish options.
Does UC Davis still have like the 7'3" kid?
I think that was UC Irvine.
It was. You're
And I
right.
don't think he's there anymore because they're 4-6.
Well, I think it was. Did Irvine play UCF a couple years ago, and they had like the two?
I think
Did that
so.
actually happen, or did I make that up?
That should have happened if it
I might have like dreamt
didn't.
that. I'm pretty. Hold on, I'm gonna look it up. I think that happened.
That's fine. Yeah, I'm trying to. I'd be fine rooting
Oh,
for UC
think it
Davis.
happened.
It should have happened. Yeah, I'm fine rooting for UC Davis, if only because I actually it's one of my favorite college towns. It is a very fun place to kind of hang out. I mean, it's not about the sports; it's just about like the environment around campus and all that. It's just a really cool vibe that they have just outside of Sacramento. Dan, do we establish if it didn't happen?
It did in 2015. It was a 61-60 win for UC Irvine.
Ooh.
They're both 7'6". It was Taco Fall versus Mamadou Ndiaye. Yeah, I think I probably wrote about this. So I think this that was definitely a thing I remembered. Taco Fall had the better game. Ndiaye got the win. Classic battle.
Yeah, I can get behind Irvine, admittedly, but like just because they're the Anteaters and
They are the Anteaters.
they really have a dope logo that I'm a big fan of. I always like the like old school, animal wearing a sweater thing. That's always big on the brand scale for me. So Irvine does have one of those.
Animal wearing a sweater. Always bonus points.
I mean, think about a lot of the classic college logos, and yeah, animal wearing a
Oh,
sweater
Wisconsin.
it's a staple.
You're not wrong. I'm trying to look for
Cal.
the one because there's a couple different Irvine logos.
Anteater with sweater. Just.
Yeah, I mean, Anteater's just a winner. We said, oh no, I see the one you're talking about, like the actual. He's literally just an Anteater in a UCF sweater. Yeah, this is pretty good. I enjoy this. The banana slugs is like the more obvious, like really obscure one, but.
I found out that's D3. I forgot UC Santa Cruz is
Yeah,
that far down.
they're not D1. unfortunately.
UC Santa Barbara's the Gauchos, which is also like a unique name.
I feel like all the California state schools have pretty good nicknames.
Yeah, they do. Fullerton's the Titans, and they use an elephant for that, sort of like in an Oakland A's type "Why is this here?" situation.
Pauly's what, the Mustangs?
Pauly's the Mustangs.
Which is not as different, yeah, but not as different. You know, still there aren't that many Mustangs.
Long Beach State's the 49ers.
Riverside's the Highlanders, and then Northridge is the Matadors.
Yeah, those are fine.
Yeah, so that's just a strong, that's the Big West, just strong group of nicknames.
Agreed. I think Big West might be the winner in just in terms of, like, I mean, it's the easiest for me to watch, but I think in general, like, just as far as, like, when you confine your borders to just California plus Hawaii, and then, like, just really, I mean, all of these schools have something in common in that they're all UC or Cal State schools. Which is good. It's just like a nice... There's just so much brand there, and then they all have these unique mascots, which is great. Have to give the Big West props for that. And I'm actually glad that the Big East thing fell apart, and San Diego and Boise didn't show up, and then they would have showed up at the Big West, and then they would have just like lorded over the Big West, and that would have ruined everything. As much as I love San Diego State, and I do casually support the Aztecs by way of my in-laws, still don't think having like one team or two teams towering over everybody else is really like a fun thing to do.
No, I agree. So, I mean, you basically get the Gonzaga problem.
Right. Which I've said many a thing about how much I hate that league for it. And wish that Gonzaga would join the Mountain West.
It just seems like it would make more sense.
So much more sense. All right. Trying to close this out here. A couple other teams. Towson's 9-1. Nobody in the Horizon League looks like they're worth supporting. Ivy League sucks this year.
Missouri Valley is probably too good to like really count, I would assume.
Although I feel like enough teams have left. I mean, like Valpo's... I could ride with Loyola Chicago or Valpo, I guess.
Loyola Chicago, I just didn't know was even a thing until today. So I like that we discovered them kind of naturally. And they are the Ramblers.
They're the Ramblers. And like... They actually used to be in the Horizon, and then they replaced... They were the Wichita State replacement.
Okay. All right. That's... Yeah, because I think they were kind of a surprise. I think most... They were expecting, I think, Omaha or one of those other schools, and they got Loyola Chicago instead.
Well, that was a smart idea for them, just in terms of, like, oh, let's just go get a bigger market and become more important in the Midwest's arguable, like, best city, because yeah,
I want to see what their actual mascot looks like.
Yeah, that's like the deciding.
The wolf logo is kind of weird.
I don't love it. It looks like Madden created team.
He also looks stoned, like really stoned.
I can respect that.
the actual mascot is not super weird. It's a pretty standard wolf, so less exciting.
Less exciting. Yeah.
They might have an actual wolf though.
Who? That's cool. I'm always a big fan of live mascots. I stopped in on Mike the Tiger when I was at LSU, and that dude was awesome. Let's see.
All right, so this was not a full-time thing. They brought wolves on campus, I guess, in 2012.
they brought Kanye West on campus in 2012 to sing Wolves. And
it was a weird moment. He was very in his own emotions.
Kanye actually brought Wolves on campus, thinking that they were requesting Wolves instead of the song.
Also, the person who wrote this blog post, so I don't want to just totally rip apart, because, but it sounds like a fourth grade like show and tell. we also heard about the animal shelter, that they came from where they housed 9 purebred wolves.
Of course, as one does.
They had 2 wolves, Chinoa and Zeus, and they were amazing.
They sound amazing.
I really wish this random college in Chicago had wolves on campus.
Just like muzzled and like roaming around. Can't attack anybody. Okay, Stephen F. Austin and Lamar. And Lamar, we had mentioned last week, ends up that they're pretty good. I don't like the Summit League because I think that it's just a garbage league, just like the WAC. Do I want Grand Canyon to do well? I can never decide.
Yeah, I don't know. Do we want to break open that, like, Pandora's box of for-profit schools.
I mean, University of Phoenix could easily be in the whack right now. They could use help.
I'm kind of shocked they haven't like made this move already.
Well, like then which campus do you pull from, or do you just become like a national university? Actually, that would be a really smart idea for University of Phoenix. To just like national this whole thing and you just take from every campus. Tell
Just
them
have like
no.
NAIA teams everywhere, and
Yeah,
then
tell them no.
like, what about Utah Valley? That team that had that crazy schedule to start the year.
Oh yeah, they're fun.
They're the Wolverines. They opened the year. I think they had back-to-back days. They played at Duke and at Kentucky, the other way around, and they almost beat UK until never mind. They have the jackass school president who decided to give their team a pop-up speech, and then they blew the game.
Oh God. Why isn't CSU Bakersfield in the Big West with everybody else, for one? And for two, why is Chicago State in this conference?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. I will say props to the UMKC, the Kangaroos. And I know Akron kind of had the kangaroo mascot, but Akron's a zips. They go halfway there.
I don't understand how that ever
UMKC,
came about.
why, Akron having kangaroo?
Well, yeah. Like
I don't
what?
know. I've been to Akron. I couldn't tell you.
Well, UMKC's old logo was actually created by Walt Disney. Fun fact.
That's interesting.
It was created by Walt Disney, and now they changed the logo so it just looks like a generic kangaroo. It's kind of stupid. Washington's up 10 on Kansas and definitely going to beat them. Doesn't make any sense. Way to go, Hop, though. You'll make this much easier in 4 years when Boeheim retires.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's, we can say that. Hopkins proving himself as a head coach is a nice thing because I think that there's like, I still very much believe that he will be the next head coach at
Oh
Syracuse.
yeah, there's a 99.9% chance of that happening. All right, so I think to end out this rambling last 5 minutes to 10 minutes now of this podcast, who are our front runners to who we're following? I think it's Loyola, Chicago.
Yep. One of the UCs.
I'm gonna go with UC Irvine, even though
Okay.
they're cruising for a bruising this year already. They're 4-6.
It's fine. They're the
That's
anteaters. They get
yeah.
points.
They get points for that. I feel like we just need it. We need an East Coast team. We have like a Central and a all these goddamn the MAAC teams are all garbage. We need
We
somebody.
talked about Ryder last week, but I do like that Ryder is not the Broncos, they're just the Bronx.
That's stupid.
It's very dumb,
Just don't like
but
that.
I don't know what the impetus of that is. What's about the NEC?
I mean, Wagner's up to. See, I actually have a lot of respect for what CCSU did in football this year after, like, their.
My dad's a CCSU alum, as we discussed before that game,
Yeah,
and they
they.
haven't made the tournament. Like in the, they played Duke 1 year in the tournament. I know that because it was a Blue Devils on Blue Devils game.
See, like, in football, they started 0-3, and then they rallied and won every game after that.
They made the playoff, I
They made the
think.
playoff, but then their best players got busted at a house party, like, 2 days beforehand.
Right, that's very stupid. That's a very college football thing to happen.
That is.
And I always, we discussed them last week too. I always have an interesting place in my heart for LIU Brooklyn because they have a cool environment
Let's
and the
go.
Blackbirds.
Let's go for them. Let's go for LIU Brooklyn,
Chicago, Loyola Chicago.
Loyola Chicago, and UC Irvine as our like pet teams that we'll check in on at the close of every podcast.
Cool, and we can always add a mountain time zone team as well if we want
Yeah, like
because we have the other.
if one team like bursts through and suddenly becomes something interesting.
Fair enough.
Cool. Well, that
Like
pod.
our array of teams that we somehow stretched this podcast way past where we probably thought we were going.
Oh yeah, no, I thought this podcast was going to be done at like the 50-minute mark.
And
Anyway,
here we are.
yeah, for the five people left listening, that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you everybody for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. Be sure to rate, review, subscribe, and go orange.
Go Orange, go Anteaters, go others.